morning, AWS, and welcome to the AWS Morning Brief. Today is Monday, September 16th, because of course it is. And this is the Morning Brief, where I dissect all of the news from the previous week from AWS's cloud ecosystem, and then gently and lovingly make fun of it. I am cloud economist Corey Quinn, based in San Francisco, fixing AWS bills here or wherever they are vexing people. This episode is sponsored by O'Reilly's VelocityConf. To get ahead today, your organization needs to be cloud native. Just ask Twitter. The 2019 Velocity program in Berlin runs from November 4th through the 7th and will cover everything from Kubernetes and site reliability engineering to observability and performance to help give you a comprehensive understanding of applications and services while staying atop a rapidly changing cloud landscape. Don't miss talks from awesome folks like Jennifer Davis, Liz Fong-Jones, Heidi Waterhouse, and many more. Listeners to the AWS Morning Brief can get 20% off of most passes to Velocity when you use the code AWS during registration. Check them out at velocityconf.com/AWS. My thanks to O'Reilly and VelocityConf for that sponsorship. Now, what happened last week in AWS? Great question. Amazon AppStream 2 enabled AWS Identity and Access Management role support for image builders and fleets, meaning you no longer need to shove IAM credentials into Git. Why would you use Git if you needed to store those things instead of providing them a bunch of other ways? Couldn't tell you to save my life, but enough people do it and cause massive problems for themselves and everyone else that I feel the need to bring it up. Amazon Athena, named after the goddess of spending money on cloud services, is now available in the Hong Kong region. A service that's existed for a long time has been brought to a region that's existed in a long time, and chalk another one up in the column of feature and service enhancements over the past year on the slide at reInvent. Amazon EKS now supports the EBS CSI driver. I'm not going to do a yeah thing with a CSI pun here, but I will in the newsletter. Amazon GuardDuty now available in the AWS Middle East Bahrain region, which pretty much means, yes, another region enhancement for a service that people aren't using enough of but probably should. Quick reminder, GuardDuty is that fun service that doesn't cost you anything directly but takes a look at a bunch of other services you have and services things you might care about. Amazon Pinpoint adds support for iOS 13 and watchOS 6 push notifications. There are two purposes there. One is a desperate, pay attention to me too, because of the iPhone announcement last week. And more relevantly, there are changes in how push notifications work. You need to explicitly declare whether one is going to be silent or not. If someone gets this wrong, you're suddenly going to see applications that have never sent push notifications that you've seen before suddenly being loud and obnoxious, like me. Amazon QuickSight launches level-aware calculations, larger SPICE datasets, and more, in the hopes that someone, anyone, will please choose to use them instead of Tableau. Amazon SageMaker now supports more refined access control using Amazon SageMaker-specific condition keys. Exciting. SageMaker is one of those neat services that needs a lot of handholding because the people who use it generally are doing data science problems but aren't themselves data scientists, but also may not be fully aware of the security apparatus surrounding AWS, which is fair. They need to be very granular on the one hand, but they also have to understand that they're not dealing with subject matter experts here, and it's incredibly easy to be challenging and create problems for customers. AWS Private Link now supports Amazon Recognition. Finally, thank you, Amazon. You have come up with a Amazon Recognition feature that is not either deeply, deeply troubling or wildly tone deaf. Good job. Amazon's Quantum Ledger Database, or QLDB, went generally available last week. I thought that was the week before, but there's at least another notification about that. Good for it. This was announced at reInvent and has been teased for a long time and fortunately has been released just before the next reInvent. Good work. They are this year's C5 instances. AWS App Mesh now supports retry policies. Awesome, as opposed to trying something, it fails the first time, and giving up, like that time I took piano lessons as a kid. AWS Elemental Media Tailor server-side ad insertion now supports live pre-roll. Those are a whole bunch of words that I don't care about. Why? Because as you've already heard on this podcast, I don't insert ads after the fact. I read them and tell stories about them on the fly while telling you what the hell AWS has done the previous week. I understand not everyone can do that. I'm just better than they are. The AWS Marketplace makes it easier to deploy Lambda functions with AMIs. They've had AMIs in the marketplace for a while, and they've had Lambda functions from time to time. But now you can deploy them together, which is awesome. This gets towards what AWS really wants. If there's a problem that a customer has, they hope that if they ignore the problem long enough, that the customer will solve it themselves, ideally with Lambda. This empowers that lazy behavior. AWS RoboMaker now supports connectivity to a simulation job, reinforcing the fact that we are living in a simulation. AWS Storage Gateway adds Amazon CloudWatch logging and metrics for File Gateway, answering neatly the question of, this service is great, but how do we make a lot more money off of customers using it? AWS Storage Gateway supports IBM Spectrum Protect on Linux and 5 terabyte tapes. That's something from the ancient past. But enough about stuff that's old and busted. Let's talk for a minute about the new hotness. This episode is sponsored in part by Logic Monitor. Are you moving to the cloud? Are you already there? One of those is probably true if you're listening to this. LM Cloud from Logic Monitor can help you maximize your investment in AWS with automated discovery, pre-configured logic modules, built-in alert thresholds, and out-of-the-box dashboards. With Logic Monitor, you get better visibility into your cloud workloads alongside your legacy on-premises environments, so you can get single pane of glass views into your entire distributed infrastructure. If you want to learn more about LM Cloud and how it can make your team more efficient and effective, check them out at logicmonitor.com. My thanks to them for sponsoring this ridiculous podcast. That's enough new hotness. Let's talk about something old and busted. AWS Transfer for SFTP now supports logical directories for S3. That's right. Transfer for SFTP provides an SFTP endpoint for S3 and now supports logical directory structures, which, if you're stuck in the world of SFTP, is a cold comfort. From the world of elastic load balancing, network load balancers now support multiple TLS certificates using server name indication. Huh, I must have missed the part where NLBs could handle TLS termination, but good for them. One of the nice things about NLBs, unlike ELBs or ALBs, is that they don't require pre-warming at all. You can just drop a bunch of traffic onto them and go. The fact that they can do that with multiple TLS certificates is fascinating to me, and I'm wondering if that impacts that ability or not, but I don't believe it does, because otherwise I would have heard the screaming from here. Amazon Lumberyard 1.21 now available. And Lumberyard is a games engine, and the only thing it's notable for is that in its terms and conditions, there's a specific exemption that in the event that the CDC or a successor body declares a zombie uprising, you're now allowed to use it for all kinds of things that you normally couldn't due to the Amazon terms of service, such as chemical weapons, creating nuclear weapons, etc. Why they need to say you can't use Amazon services for those things sort of befuddles the mind, but here we are. You can now manage your EFS limits with Amazon service quotas. EFS is their NFS equivalent, and when you say quotas in the context of NFS, you think of something useful, but nope. What this means is that you can control service limits around EFS with their new services quota tool. It doesn't mean you get to restrict each user to only use, say, 5 gigs of disk space. Oh, no, 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 no. You restrict that by running out of money. You can now add additional metadata to Amazon VPC flow logs, making them several orders of magnitude less useless than they used to be. You used to have to do all kinds of tracking down to figure out which resource or which instance was sending or receiving data. Now it tags that for you. Awesome, and I'm still angry it didn't launch that way. AWS Service Catalog announces budget visibility. I'm not sure how much budget visibility it gets into there, but I do wonder if it's just a traffic light system from probably not much to little bit spendy to hold on to your butts. Updated training courses help APN partners gain new customer opportunities. Good, good, good. Because if there's one thing that's going to convince an entire terrified partner ecosystem to work better with AWS, it's AWS moving further into the training ecosystem. There's now an SDK for work mail message flows. Namely, you can now work on the content of work mail email messages if you're using work mail. But let me save you time, you're not. You're using G Suite or Exchange or Office 365 because you're a responsible grown-up who makes good choices. Well, that's not fair, says the work mail team. Remind me again, which internal email system Amazon uses? Hint, it's not work mail. Starting on September 24th, there are new vCPU-based on-demand instance limits with Amazon EC2, and this was a long time coming. For the longest time, the way that you were limited with EC2 inside of AWS was that unless your service limits for your accounts were increased, you could only spin up some arbitrary number of each instance family. This was great until Amazon decided to declare war on Alphabet and instead accidentally declared war on the English alphabet and started launching instance types of every size, color, and shape, which means that those limits were now ludicrously large. Now what they're saying, simply put, is that you can have instance limits that are governed by the numbers of vCPUs and then broken down across several very broad categories of family type. And that mostly solves this problem. And they can continue to add EC2 instance types with what can only be described as reckless abandon. And from there, you can go ahead and just allocate vCPUs among those. You still need to watch the limit type, but you don't have to watch 8,000 limit types. And lastly, there was an interesting post on why does AWS contribute to open source? Don't ever ask a question in a headline because someone cynical like me will answer it. AWS largely contributes to open source because they keep getting the crap kicked out of them in the press when they don't, and then release something proprietary built on top of open source solutions. So it is a desperate play for damage control, if you ask me. They'd use Firecracker as an example, which is one of the best named Amazon things ever, because people are going to use it to attempt to build Lambda themselves, and in the process, blow their damn hands off. That's all that happened last week in the world of AWS. Thank you for tuning in. I'm cloud economist Corey Quinn. If you have a problem with your AWS bill, give me a visit at lastweekinaws.com, and I'll talk to you next week.
This has been a Humble Pod production. Stay humble.